Hey, you are listening to The Workplace Leader. This is the podcast where we go behind the scenes of corporate real estate, talking to industry experts about how they shape the next generation workplace. I'm your host, Sabine M. And in today's episode, I'm speaking with Jens Ebbe Rasmussen. Jens is Senior Vice President, Business Development at Core Service Management. Hi, everyone. Today, I'm with Jens Ebbe Rasmussen from Core. I met him in Copenhagen at a live event. I still get really excited about these, meeting people in person. It just makes a different impression. And he gave a really interesting presentation there. And that's why I asked him to come on. Hi, Jens.
Hi. Nice to meet you today again.
Yeah, thank you. Let's start, maybe for people who don't know, with what Core does, and then also what your role at Core is, and what your professional background is, how you got to there.
Yeah, let's start with the Core. So Core was started around 98, 99 within the construction company Skanska. It remained in Skanska until 2004, where it started a journey with the PE ownership, which lasted until 2015 when we were listed at the Stockholm Exchange. That's where we are today. Our vision is to create the happiest, healthiest, most prosperous workplaces across the Nordic region. And we do that by delivering integrated facility management services, so the full package. That's what we do for 60% of our customers. For 40% of our customers, we just deliver single services where, you know, property services, cleaning services, food and beverage, and workplace services are the majority. Most of our customers are private. We do have 27% public customers. But if you go over four large customers across the Nordics, we have Equinor in Norway. We have Volvo Cars in Sweden. We have the Danish police in Denmark. And then we have ABB in Finland. So that's basically Core. So my role at Core is that I'm formerly the Senior Vice President for Business Development, which is, at Core is organic sales. It's M&A. And we have central team. We have a couple of country teams, one in each, actually. And we're working with retention of the current customers. We're working with marketing. We're working with advisory. And of course, organic sales. And I've been a quite long time with Core. I've been here since 2002. But before that, I'd actually started out in the Officers Academy, Military Officers Academy, Armored Infantry, it was, to be precise. Then I went on to business school in Lund. I joined Nordea in Denmark, worked there for a couple of years. And then I joined McKinsey in Stockholm. And there I became a father for the first time and a second time. And I started working in a project with facility management early on, not with Skanska at the time, but another company. And I got thrilled by the business and moved over to Core in 2002 and really never found the reason to leave because it's been so fun and being part of building this company that we've built.
That's the dream, right? That you find the job that's fun and that you stick around with for because you like it and not because you have to. That's cool.
Yeah, and the company never was the same during this period. The company evolved. You know, so where I started is not where I am right now because it's so much bigger, so much different and covering so much more. And that's really cool to be part of that build.
And I could imagine it's still evolving now with services around real estate and facilities becoming more of a focus topic. I think we'll dive into that a little later a bit more. Let's look at how Core is structured. How big is the company? How big is your own real estate portfolio?
Yeah, so the company turns over 900 million euro or so. And it has some 11,000 employees covering the four Nordic countries. And then we have a structure in Benelux as well. So we do have own offices in the larger cities. But I mean, the majority of our operation is with our customers. And when it comes to property, we serve some 20 million square meters. When it comes to cleaning, we serve some 15 million square meters. And if you want to size our food and beverage operation, it's around 150 in-house restaurants and cafes. That's our size.
Well, that's quite impressive.
Thanks.
For Core, which business initiatives are driving the strategy?
Yeah, so we have this overarching CORE 2025 strategy. And I was about to dive into that, but then you asked me right before we started this, but what happened during COVID, Jens? What initiatives did you take? And obviously, we had to take a step back at that point to think about, is it still valid or will everyone stay at home forever, driving CORE out of business? And that was a huge crisis in 18 months ago for us. But we had to act fast. We had to just do what was right for society, for employees, for customers. And we just dived into that. So we built the field hospital, set up a service operation for a field hospital with the authorities. We had employees asking to work in intensive care units just to help doctors be part of getting rid of COVID. So a lot happened that questioned our strategy. We dived into it, did the best things we could during that period. But at the same time, we had a process going on internally where we actually ended up in that, yes, things will change, but we do not need to change our strategy altogether. We need to add to it a little bit. So that takes me back really to where you started this question, what is our strategy right now? And that is really, build a truly sustainable company. That's number one. And number two is to achieve substantial profitable growth. And I just picked a few topics out of that. Sustainability, that's at the CORE of everything we do, business, social, environmental. We have external targets in these areas that we communicate. So along with our quarterly financial results, we communicate how we've done on environment, how we've done on social, and we link bonuses to these targets. So it's not pure financial targets anymore. It's divided. So that's really important to us. And then secondly, we're working a lot with innovation. And we kind of realized we can't do this by ourselves. We need to tap into working with the authorities, working with the universities, working with startups, and even working with competitors sometime. It's so important to innovate, not least to get sustainable solutions, right? So we need to work with everyone else. Customer experience is the third topic that is part of, building a truly sustainable company. Then we're actually also redoing our own offices, and that we're in the middle of. But we're thinking a lot about that and putting a lot of effort into that.
Let me then just ask you, how does the return to office look like at CORE?
Yeah, well, I think our experiences as CORE and not with our customers, but with CORE looks like and mirrors what happened with everyone else. We were afraid when everyone were moving home. We did a survey, seemed to work well. People were engaged, motivated. They were excited about not having to commute. They missed their colleagues. They missed getting the inspiration in the office, getting development, meeting colleagues, the creative meetings, and so on. We supported people with IT stuff, tech stuff at home. But still, the work environment was said to be the thing that worked the least well, ergonomics. We saw 5 to 10% of the employees in the office. And now from September, all of this is shifting. Everyone is coming back. And that is according to the local stipulations in the different countries. So right now, we saw towards the end of September, the beginning of October, 50% of the employees back. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, no surprise, compared to a 70% peak before COVID. So 50 now, 70 before. But we also said that the September and October were to be test months. But in November, we are putting out the more, not the firm, but we want people to come back from November and onwards to a higher degree because out of our 11,000 employees, the vast majority haven't got the opportunity or the option to work from back home, but they need to work at the customer sites. So the people based in offices need to try to come back together, but still it's no policy. It's more saying it's the office is our primary workplace. We need to try to come back, but you discuss this with your manager and you solve it in the best possible way. So we're not forcing people back, but we're trying to create pull, and we're trying to do that, with safety measures so that you feel safe, functional measures so that you feel everything works well, and with attractive measures to make them want to come into the office.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much where all companies are at, and I can say for us as well, we're a small company also. You've mentioned a couple of things that you've done to attract people to the office. Have you implemented specific tools and processes to support that?
Yeah, we actually have. And one thing we learned or kind of foresaw when thinking about what would happen in the big return was the trial and error period, where different companies would have different policies and that the questions would be so many. So one process that we implemented was actually creating an advisory unit. And we've had this from before, but now we've enlarged this, we've built it across the countries, and the advisory unit is there for any project and any question the customers would have. But we quickly saw after summer that they aren't sufficient to take care of all the questions that pop up in every single customer situation right now. So we built a framework where we looked into the most common questions that pop up from customers so that any contract manager can have a discussion with their counterpart on what we can do. And right now we're in the phase of trial and error or the big return. And as I mentioned before, making the office safe is one big topic. Making the office functional is one big topic, and making the office attractive to pull the employees in, not having to force them back, is one big topic. So attached to all of these three topics, we have also built a portfolio of services where we can help. So making it safe, there you would have examples like we call everything we do smart and then an extra word. So smart climate, built on light air technology, reducing airborne viruses with 97%. Footfall sensors to be able to measure the number of employees you have in the office. Cleaning host is more of a concept, but you know, taking cleaning to a new level from before. And then we carry on like this through, you know, the safe phase, the functional phase, and the attractive phase, creating services in all areas. So I guess that's the framework we have built. And out of that springs a number of tools and processes and services and so on.
That makes sense. I will have a follow-up question to that. But I have another one before that's closer to the lockdown and the pandemic. How has that impacted the topic of employee experience at CORE?
I mentioned that I started in CORE in 2002, but I had experience as an employee before that. And I remember going into one interview, must be, you know, 25 years ago, and where they asked me before the interview, do you want coffee? Oh, yes, please. Well, then you can go into the corridor and buy in the vending machine. So that's where we're coming from, I guess. And then over years, business logic have changed and you can't foresee the problem as a company you will bump into. But you need employees that can adapt, be fast, creative, and innovative. So the war for talent has been a long-standing theme. And at the same time, we're meeting generations that ask the question, what's in it for me? And what's the greater purpose? And then at the same time, realize that with internet and social media, that everyone is a marketeer, right? Everyone will be saying something about you as a company, as an employer. So and organizational structures become flatter. We work in teams and cross-functional teams. And, you know, first day employee talks to the CEO in projects straight out. So there are a lot of demands on us as employees and employers. And what has COVID done to all of this than to add to it? And I think a few things COVID has added to us as employers. We need to offer our employees the ability to work from everywhere, right? That if you don't offer that, it's not good. But we at the same time need to even strengthen building company culture, brand loyalty. And you can use the office for that, but you can use other measures as well. But you need to get your employees feeling something extra in their heart for your companies. And at the same time, I think COVID has put lots of new demands on leadership. We need to invite employees closer. We need to share our own experiences, our own feelings as leaders, as senior management. And all of these three things have become more difficult with COVID. And then we saw the development from, you know, back 25 years ago, where you need to be closer to the employees. You need to get them feel more for you. So COVID just made all of this more difficult. So at CORE, I mean, we did even before COVID, we had starting to think about employee experience with ourselves and with our customers. And we assigned a VP of customer experience. We built the customer experience model, and it evolves around, you know, the aspects of people, products, places, processes. There's a huge model built around that. I won't take you through the details, but in essence, first, we want to secure that we do what we're asked to do on time, on quality. Second, we want to simplify interacting and ordering stuff from Core when we are the service supplier. It should be easy, simple, intuitive. And then third, we ask every employee to engage and think from the customer perspective to see how can we wow the customer? Is there such a possibility in this service? So thinking about employees, thinking about the employee experience is something that has become tougher with COVID. And it's also something that we as a service supplier can do for our employees, but also for the customer's employees. So this is a huge topic. This is part of a strategy, as I started out saying a while back.
I think while it has become tougher, it's also like a huge turning point to bring more awareness to it, because it has been lingering in the back all the time. I think you had that in that presentation in Copenhagen as well, where you said it has changed from the employee being a resource to the employee being your own customer of the company, of getting the coffee and not having to go to the vending machine to buy it. And most what I liked about what you just said was like the, you need to have your employees feel something extra. I think this is a really nice way of putting it, because that extra can be anything, and that will be very, very individual. The extra can be, like you said before, you've been for 20 years with the company and you just like the job, you enjoy the ride, the journey is great. So that's your extra, maybe. And for others, the extra might be the barista coffee they get or the smoothie. And then for another person, it'll be something else. So
it's often tied to the office. I mean, recruiting people in my department has always been extremely important, and we do work with external help. And this external help usually say, take them on a walk through your office, because whenever I come there, he says, I feel the warmth. I see how people talk to each other by the coffee machine. I see how they greet each other in the hallways. There is an atmosphere that the office, you know, displays. So the office is really important to building this little extra.
Are you measuring then the success of your workplace initiatives? And I'm assuming you are. Has this changed?
It is really important, and it probably has changed, but we're talking a lot more now about the correlation, the great correlation between, you know, satisfied employees impacting satisfaction of customers, impacting the way we're able to meet the contract KPIs that are impacting the financial KPIs. So all of that is a process where things impact each other. So measuring and making sure we get in the positive spiral is a point in itself. And then what we do measure kind of span from soft stuff like interviews, surveys, and so on, to the harder stuff where we use sensors or feedback questionnaires, foodback it's called, with food, or where we measure weight of waste off of lunch and so on. And that goes on. So everything from soft to hard to make sure that we capture some kind of development in what we want to do. And yesterday I was talking to the head of innovation, asking about what has changed over time since COVID. And what we came up with is that there are lots of more measures right now how working from back home impacts you. Those are more on the softer side, of course. But then we see more measurements of well-being popping into the KPIs, things like sick leave or some kind of stressometer. And then also so more about ergonomics and if people, you know, get problems with shoulders or backs and so on. And that we think have changed a little bit with people sitting and working differently after COVID.
That's true. I think mental health is one of these topics that has become more, I don't want to say important, but companies are more attuned to it because they don't see their employees. So you don't get all the signals of how they are feeling anymore that much.
No, I mean, leadership has changed. I mean, when you don't see your colleagues every day, you don't know how they are doing, and there can be a week in between you even have a conversation with them. It's more difficult to pick up if someone is not feeling well. And typically, measuring motivation among employees is something you do once a year, maybe in the yearly measurement, right? And you need to pick that up in between.
And build stronger links even through remote to build that trust that people tell you if they're not well and they need a break or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think you've tapped into that before, that services across your clients are different now and they all have questions. Do you see now differences for your clients between different regions, company sizes, fields they're in, or is it mostly depending on the degrees of flexibility they're offering, what they're looking for in workplace and facilities services?
I think there are some correlation between if you're a rural company or if you're a city-bound company, if you're a manufacturing company or you're an R&D-based company, and in between different industries. So typically, the more rural, the more close to manufacturing you are, you tend to be able to and go back to the office early on, sit in the office. The more city bound, the more, you know, desktop based work you do, you avoid commuting and sit more at home and so on. But I think most companies realize that they want to get their employees back on site. And that has been the discussion topic, I don't know, the last 6-12 months, that you want to get them back and how to get them back. But still, even there, we see some differences. We have two companies, both in the telecom sector, one saying that, or saying already after summer, we want everyone back. We're creating a huge package for this. And the other saying, you know, we are staying at home 100% until January 1st. And when I think about this, I think it has all got to do with the trial and error period, that different companies foresee different futures and will test different things. I think FM has never really been so much on the dinner table topic as before. I never had friends take interest in what I do really before. It's always been difficult to explain what FM is. But right now, everyone has an opinion. Right now, everyone has a story to tell about what they are doing at their company. And some things overlap, but lots of things are different. So I think we will see huge differences for a period of, say, 18, 24 months more.
Are there then new requirements surfacing towards facilities service as a result of that development?
I think there are. If you look at the public sector, for example, you know, public tender is driven towards sourcing at price as a very important factor. But I don't think any public customer want to be caught the year out with having poor quality in cleaning. So I think we will see cleaning evolve, become a new service. There is a lot of talk about the cleaning service becoming demand driven with sensors or other measurements predicting how much we need to clean and where we need to clean. Some expect the service to go down in price for this reason. Others expect the service to become more directed to where it's needed. I think there will be a general upgrade how we think about cleaning, really. So that's really a new topic in the service. And food, of course, we were in the Nordics moving towards the buffet type of lunches at the workplace. That is not so much any buffets anymore. It's served. So that's a simple difference from before. And then if you think about how all services are delivered, the need for flexibility, flexing down, changing is also something that is new to us. So I think in a way, all services will be impacted and adopted, but they will not be altogether different.
Now, I do know that you have long-term experience in the field, mentioned it before. How have the business models for facility services developed over the years, and what are the drivers for these developments?
Yeah. So when we started out, no one really connected, and now I'm talking about 20 years ago, 20, 25 years ago, no one was really connected the facility management, the facility services as a whole, or were thinking about integrated facility management. So when we went to a customer at that point of time, we kind of had to show them an organizational chart showing them the different services and said that there are synergies in between these services if you join them. And we were working from that point with senior management at the customers in a business model that was basically looking at the cost base, the services that should be carved out from the customer and sourced from the supplier later on. And those models, call them top down, call them takeover of baseline with guaranteed savings, kind of were the first models. And at that point, the driver was really, you know, don't disturb core business at the customer. Don't take out the last 5% of savings. Make sure that everything works. Companies that had done that in the first wave were in a second wave looking for savings, driving traditional RFPs using the consultants that start to appear at that time. And they drove substantial savings out of the contracts in a second wave. And I think they got excited by that and tried to do that a third and a fourth time, eventually sometimes moving over the line of what was sound, you know, pushing the contract stipulations too far, pushing price down too far. And some suppliers ran into problems and delivering poor quality, not being able to provide the services that should be provided. So at that point of time, we have seen a development in two directions. And if we look at the Nordics, I think there has been a strive to put the supplier and the customer on the same side of the table, trying to find joint incentives, working with open and transparent model, putting up incentives so that if the customer wins, the supplier wins and vice versa, and also trying to share risk in a way that makes it balanced. So the vested partnership could be one of those models, and that's gaining ground in the Nordics. And then outside, I've seen international RFPs coming toward the Nordics where they've been working a lot with very clear instructions on what to do. Do this, do this, do this, don't do that. And then attaching bonus and malus models to that. So that's another way of taking control of what you want to do. And I think this securing that quality and timely services happen is the focus right now. And then again, we're kind of trying to capture what happens in COVID in all of this. And then the flexibility will be a new, even more important driver than before. But what's fun here is that sustainability is also a topic for the models, business models right now. So in one customer discussion, we can be interviewed on how we're going to take good care of our employees, how we're going to offer them sound wages, predictable work days, and so on. And then when we turn that page, we go over and discuss how we're going to offer the customer full flexibility. There I try to connect the two areas. You know, if we have a cleaner that needs a full-time wage and knowledge of having that full-time wage for a couple of months in advance, it's difficult to have a customer where this cleaner works full-time who want to change the service need from one day to the next. And making that equation work is the next business model challenge, I think.
I think that goes for a lot of resources as well, probably for space itself also, because you said earlier, Tuesday to Thursday, people come in Monday, Friday, the office is empty. What do you do with the empty resource on Monday, on Friday? Is there a way we can make use of this space?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm coming to the last questions, and this one's actually nicely adding to this one. So now we touched upon how things have developed in the past. If you had a wish for the future and could magically solve any future of office problem, what would it be?
If I could find a way to make the FM industry truly sustainable, climate neutral, circular, 360 degrees, so that our industry would be in the forefront of helping climate and sustainability across the globe. That would be, you know, my number one priority. We spend a lot of energies. I think 36% of spent energy is spent in the built area. 40% of all CO2 has got something to do with the built area. Plastics, other consumables, red meat in the restaurants, different chemicals in the installments in the property. You know, there are lots of stuff that our industry could change, and these were only a few examples. But if I could find a solution to all of that, I mean, that would be so great.
That would be amazing. And I'd hope that other countries adopt it as well, because I do think in the Nordics, you're really at the forefront of things. I remember, I mean, it's been 5 years ago, business trip to the US, and in the canteen, even for when you sat down, they gave you plastic plates and plastic forks and knives to throw away after your meal. And I was shocked. I was like, what's this?
Yeah, there is a lot to be done.
Okay, last one from my end, then I'll let you go. Who else should I talk to on this podcast? And is there something you would like to ask them?
Yeah, there is a company called Vasakronan, who is a huge property owner in Sweden. They appointed a head of sustainability, whose name is Anna Denell. And at the same time, Vasakronan has been elected as one of the top performing sustainable property owners worldwide. And that is, you know, we're amazed. That is so cool. And they happen to be one of our customers as well. But I think they've done this trip in all areas where they work. But I would ask her what single action that they have taken that have had the largest impact on sustainability. And it should be a action that they have taken, but not other, so many other property owners have taken. So what could other companies easily copy from what Vasakronan did that would have a great impact?
Yeah, that is a very good piece of information and idea to ask her. I might ask you to spell the name of the company out for me, because it sounds very Swedish and I don't think what I'm thinking of in my mind is how I can Google for it.
I will do that.
We'll do that afterwards. Thank you so much, Jens, for taking the time for this conversation. I think it's really interesting what's happening in facility services and your area of expertise and how we can shape things there. So thanks again.
Thanks for having me, Sabina.
Thanks for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode of The Workplace Leader, there's more. Go visit our blog and have a look at some of the other topics we have covered. We have just released a study on data readiness in CRE, along with the opportunity to assess your organization's workplace insight score. Or tune into our next episode of The Workplace Leader.